This is The After Party, live with Kip McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Hey, everybody. It is The After Party Live. Thank you so much for hanging out with me on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm so excited about the lottery. Maybe you could tell this morning. I know I'm not going to win, but I'm just dreaming big over here. So thank you for being here. I do want to do a little announcement. I know a lot of people have received notes that if you're a contributor to the show monthly, that had been canceled as we switch over. And so there is now in the show description a new link. So if you're so inclined to do that, I probably won't ask as much just because it's uncomfortable and I feel like I've been asking all morning. So it is there. You will find it. It is a PayPal link and it's under the show description. So thank you for supporting the After Party Live and thank you for all the wonderful emails that you've sent in, show ideas, story ideas, all of these things. So, so appreciated. All right. Well, we have another little late start coming in because the Mark Thompson Show, this show begins when the Mark Thompson Show ends. So let's get right to it because I have a lot planned for you guys today. We'll jump right into animals. And I do have an update. Remember Chunky Gator? Yeah, Chunky Gator. Chunky Gator has been moved. You know, Chunky Gator was living in this lot that was littered with trash. Chunky Gator, as the name would imply, is quite large. 400 pounder, I think. Maybe even more than that. Well, after the story came out, being animal folks, came out and removed Chunky Gator from this former Coca-Cola plant area where he was living in this lot that was full of trash and debris. And he's now been taken from this lot in Temple Terrace to a place called Croc Encounters. And once he arrived there, the vets took one look at him and they're like, time for Chunky Gator to go on a croc diet. So he's on a weight loss regimen. They say, yeah, you know, he is a little heavy for this particular animal. Some people in the neighborhood where this croc had been found say locals had been feeding him. They named him Coca-Cola because he was on the former Coca-Cola plant site. He apparently was served lunch and meat and ham by nearby residents. So his new diet is expected to be a little bit more appropriate for his species. They say all their alligators at Croc Encounters are on a mix of a pellet diet. They'll feed him fish and chicken and slim him down a little bit. So he's on the way to health. Although Croc Encounters, I don't like the idea of people paying to go, you know, I mean, I hope that they have a good life there. So, but update there on Chunky Croc. He's no longer living in this squalor in this area where he shouldn't have been anyway. So that's good. Also, we have a lot of stories about snakes being found in weird spots. What do you think about walking out on your front porch and there's snakes, venomous snakes mating right outside your front door? This is how life goes in Australia. Yeah, they had to call out the Sunshine Coast snake catchers to come and get these mating snakes. You know, I know people don't like to be interrupted during the act. I'm sure snakes don't like to be interrupted during the act. They were probably not happy. Well, this snake catcher came out, responded to this home where the residents say there was a pair of highly venomous serpents having an amorous encounter right next to their front door. So the snake catcher grabs the entwined snakes by the tails, puts them in a bag. They were eastern brown snakes, which is apparently one of the world's most venomous species. And they took them to a wilderness area. I don't know, trying to pick up these snakes while they're going at it. Maybe they're otherwise occupied, but I wouldn't want to piss them off even further. This story, kind of funny. This bird is cool looking. although you don't want to mess with it. This is a rhea bird. And rhea birds are dangerous. They kick you. And when they kick you, they can really injure you. Well, this rhea bird, it's R-E-R-H-E-A, rhea bird, has been on the loose in Norfolk, England. Someone had it. I don't know. They keep it outside in a enclosure. It got loose. So this bird is a small cousin of the ostrich. It was at a farm in Diss, England, D-I-S-S, Diss, England, when floods came and somehow this creature was allowed to swim across a river. It basically broke out of its pen, swam across a river, and it's been on the run ever since. For a month, they say, this rhea bird was in the field next door to the farm. The farm's about 30 or 40 acres. They say they tried so many times to catch him. Every time we rounded up a few people to help, they say he just bolted right before we even got within 100 yards of him. He didn't want to go back. This bird's name is Chris. They call him Chris. He was spotted numerous times in the Suffolk area. He was recently caught on camera in another area. He doesn't seem to be having trouble finding food. He seems to be thriving just fine out in the wild. Residents who spot rhea in an enclosed space or in a fenced yard are being asked to contact the owner immediately. But he said, don't try to capture this bird yourself. Be aware, he said, they kick very, very hard. And I think that's why people are so scared. Either the bird's running or kicking, and no one has been able to capture it. It's been since November. This rhea bird named Chris has been on the run. He's just hanging out, eating, living his best life, you know. If you could please click the like button, I would so appreciate it. If you haven't subscribed to the After Party Live, please do that as well. It would definitely help me out. So thank you for the consideration there. There is a new item, new gadget that will tell you, especially if you're someone who maybe has issues with incontinence or other things, it's an implant that will tell a smartphone app when it's time for you to use the restroom. So there's a lot of diseases or conditions or syndromes where people don't know. And so this could be helpful for a lot of people that are struggling with certain issues like spina bifida, paralysis, certain bladder diseases. Sometimes for people, knowing when to go to the bathroom is not so cut and dried. So to help ease the frequent stress, some researchers at Northwestern University designed this sensor array. It attaches to your bladder's exterior wall, enabling it to detect its fullness in real time. And then, using embedded Bluetooth technology, that device transmits its data to a smartphone app, allowing users to monitor their bodily functions. So a lot less guesswork for people that have issues with this type of thing. The new tool is detailed in a study published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. They call it PNAS. It's only meant to prevent incontinence issues. Lacking an ability to feel bladder fullness extends far beyond obvious inconveniences, accidents, right? For millions of Americans, they say dealing with these bladder dysfunctions, not knowing when to go, can cause organ damage as well. Also, regular infections, kidney damage. So this new medical device, they say, mirrors the bladder's own elasticity, and its development, it's made of super soft, ultra-thin, stretchable strain gauze that can gently wrap the outside surface of the bladder without imposing mechanical constraints on the natural filling or voiding behavior, so it doesn't get in the way of anything. I wonder what happens, like, does the battery stop working or when the Bluetooth goes out? Or, I mean, I don't know. Do they have to go back in and do what they have to do? They say as the bladder fills, its expansion stretches out the sensor material, which in turn wirelessly sends data to your smartphone app saying, you got to go to the bathroom. It's time for you. Technology, man. It's cool. This, you know me, again, love a good lotto story. back to Michigan. A lot of winners in Michigan. Either that or they're just really good at publicizing it. This woman in Michigan, she said she thought her Michigan lottery account had been hacked. I guess there they have a certain lotto account. She logged in. She found that she won a prize of $25,000 a year for the rest of her life. Her name is Patricia. She's 65. She said she bought a ticket for the March 12th Lucky for Life drawing at MichiganLottery.com. Selected certain numbers. She said she and her husband started playing Lucky for Life about a year ago, and they've really enjoyed it. She said she won $200 a couple months ago, and so that's what she was using in this account to buy more tickets. And she said the morning after the drawing, she's having a cup of coffee. She logs in to see, does she want anything? And she said, I saw I won $25,000 a year for life. And I said, this can't be real. She said, I thought someone hacked my account. So I logged out, I logged back in, and the prize was still in her balance. She calls her son. He told me it had to be real. She said she still can't fathom winning, that it is unbelievable. So instead of taking the 25 grand for life every year for the rest of her life, she decided to take it as one lump sum payment of $390,000. So some of the money is going to start a scholarship in honor of a deceased loved one. The rest, she said, will go into her savings account. How cool is that? I love when people start scholarships. I love when people, you know, that do something good with the money win. So congratulations to her. $25,000 a month for the rest of your life. I like it. They found, also in Michigan, an old steamship. This had been missing for a long time. It is the Milwaukee. It was lost in 1886. The Michigan Shipwreck Research Association, say that five times fast, the Michigan Shipwreck Research Association found the remains of the steamship Milwaukee lost in 1886. So far, they've found 19 shipwrecks off the shores of West Michigan. It was found using side-scan sonar. They worked on filming the wreck using a remotely operated vehicle and confirmed it was the Milwaukee. They have new accounts of the accident. They've studied the water currents in the area, and it led them right to the Milwaukee after searching for only 2 days. So, pretty cool. The Milwaukee was commissioned in 1868 by the Northern Transportation Company of Ohio. It carried passengers and goods west on four of the five Great Lakes from the Northern Railroad line in New York to Chicago with stops in between. They launched when the Wall Street Panic came, it was 1873, and the country went into a deep depression. But the Northern Transportation Company still operated 32 steamships, even though they were being reorganized. By 1880, the railroads expanded, the canal locks enlarged, making the ship inefficient. At this point, the ship was 14 years old and was still usable. So it was repurposed to carry a larger cargo, and then it was sold off. It was then used to carry lumber to Chicago. And here's where it falls apart. July 9th, 1886, the ship leaves Chicago after unloading its lumber, and it heads back to Muskegon for another load. At around midnight, the Milwaukee was off of Holland and bearing straight for the Sea Hickocks, a ship belonging to another Muskegon lumber company that was nearly identical in carrying a full load of lumber. They say the Milwaukee, the lookout on the ship, first spotted lights of the other vessel, notified the captain. Navigational rules were specific. Both ships were supposed to slow down. Each had to steer to starboard to avoid a collision. Each had to blast their steam whistle to signal their course change. But a thick fog rolled in, and both captains kept speed. One made a quick turn, tried to signal to the other ship by blowing the steam whistle, but the pull chain broke. And they didn't know what each other was doing. When the fog lifted, one boat was coming straight for the Milwaukee. They tried to make a quick turn, but the other boat slammed right into the Milwaukee, nearly capsizing the ship. The lookout was thrown into the water, and he, along with the other ship just disappeared into the fog. So they tried to blow a distress signal. They tried to work to save the ship. A lot of people escaped onto a lifeboat of the other ship, but the Milwaukee sank. So here's what they see now, this many years later, when they find it at the bottom, using side scan sonar. Interesting. So it looks like they're going to try to pull it up. The captains of both lost their licenses for a time because neither one of them slowed down as they were supposed to or followed rules. So that is interesting. Preservation of what was down, what's down there, what's on that ship, what life was like at that time, all of these things. Let's move to Norway. There was a time that in my life, when I first got my driver's license, you may know, I've mentioned before that my parents are divorced. And so I grew up here in Petaluma where I live now, but I went to high school in the Santa Cruz area. And in Capitola, as you leave Capitola, headed toward Santa Cruz, I think, or maybe toward Aptos, there's this roadway where if you're going kind of fast, there's a big dip in the road and it almost feels like a roller coaster where your heart drops to your stomach. And I used to go over it a little fast. And I think I got 2 tickets within the span of, I don't know, a month. My dad lost it and took my car away and said, you got the tickets because you don't understand the financial responsibility of having a car. So your car's taken away, you have to pay your own tickets, and you're going to have to cover the increase in the insurance, right? A way to learn about what it means when you get tickets. You're not just given a car with no, you know, lessons learned, right? Someone else is paying for it, so you don't feel the pain of that. This guy needs that kind of lesson. This person, I'm telling you, he goes on this roadway, the roadways of Norway, he gets 25 speeding tickets within 19 days. I mean, here's somebody that's like, do you not get the message to slow down? If you've ever received a speeding ticket, does it not slow you down a little bit? And you're thinking, oh God, I got to really watch my speed, or I can't afford another ticket, or, you know, gosh, I didn't realize I was being so unsafe, or whatever it is. When you get a ticket, maybe it adjusts your attitude a little bit. One would hope. Perhaps slow you down for a while, maybe, or longer. This is a Frenchman. He'd been in Norway for just over a month, and now he's got a 21-day prison sentence because he did not get the message to slow the beep down. 25 speeding tickets in 19 days. He's young, 23. He'd gone to Norway looking for a job. And between February 6th and February 25th, he was caught speeding 25 times. One of them, the worst one, he was caught at the wheel of a Kia going about 70 miles an hour in a zone with a much lower speed limit. Mm-hmm. They don't do it in miles per hour. He was driving 113 kilometers per hour in a zone with a speed limit of 70 kilometers per hour. Mm. The court says you represent a danger to traffic. And his infractions were registered by fixed speed cameras. The man didn't realize that cameras were watching. He had his sentence reduced by 3 days from 24 days down to 21 because he fully confessed, I did it, I sped, yes. And they took his driver's license away for a year. Think he feels the pain? I think he feels the pain. You can't do that. You know, not even your country, I'll tell you. They're doing something in Mexico where they call it the right to sleep. They have, you know, I don't know. It's a, here, I have video for you of this. In Mexico City, they're celebrating the right to sleep. I didn't know. I knew we had, you know, a whole bunch of rights. I never thought about the right to sleep. But here's what they're doing. They're taking a little nap is what they're doing. Yeah. Look at that. Everyone taking a big collective snooze. Hey, that looks kind of nice. In the middle of the day, sometimes you're a little tired. This is happening in one of Mexico's city's busiest neighborhoods. About 200 people took time out, took this big collective nap right in the middle of the street. What they were celebrating is World Sleep Day. So it was pretty hot out there, but they had their mats. You see there, the little blue mats. And they had resting pillows for their necks. They had masks for their eyes. And they just tuned out the noise of the city and had this peaceful demonstration for the right to sleep. The doctor for the Center of Sleep and Neuroscience says the idea that sleeping well or having this event attract attention can help launch new public policies to promote rest is really important. In Mexico, they say they have long working days, but no spaces at the workplace to guarantee time for a siesta. Oh, no. Thanks to guided meditation sessions, the nap participants sank into a deep sleep. Others were just kind of relaxing for only a moment. But, you know, Mr. President Biden, that's not the sleep people. But I could get behind a sleep demonstration. Sure, why not? Anybody feel like a little siesta today? Mm-hmm. Siesta fiesta. Yeah. Time for a siesta right here. That's right. I bet they don't. I bet they don't stop you for the ticket. They probably just mail it. Imagine getting one after another. Man. Ugh. I was a bad girl. Hey, I learned fast though, right? I learned that it was my responsibility to deal with it. Angel in the Bay Area, thank you. And happy Tuesday to you. Huge mahalo for the $10. Thank you. Thank you. And Spencer Jaffe with a $5 super sticker. Thank you. F. Drumpf, go judge Chutkin. I think there's a T in there. Thank you for the $5 super sticker. I really appreciate it. Again, the new PayPal information is in the show description, so you'll find it there. All right. We are moving on to talk about UFOs. So if you were going to research UFOs, the question is, where would you go? Well, it's not here. It's somewhere else. Here's where you would go. You would go to the archives. The archives are in Sweden, and they log paranormal phenomena. They have newspaper clippings and books and firsthand accounts of people who said they visited other planets. It's all in this Swedish archive on paranormal phenomena. And a lot of people go here, people from around the world, researchers. It's called the Archives for the Unexplained, or the AFU. That's where you go to look up all things unexplained. It's run by two guys, Klaus and Anders, and they run this archive in the southeastern town of Norrköping. They said they're neither suspicious nor believers, but they're curious investigators of the unknown. The AFU, it's called Archives for the Unexplained, AFU, is the name of both the library and the association. And they've been collecting documentation for more than 50 years. They have books. They also have original documents, firsthand accounts of paranormal activity recorded on tape, photos of ghosts, they say. What they're trying to build there is a depository of knowledge. It's about 7,535 square feet, this library. And they say they're trying to get as much as we can on, as they can, on every kind of unsolved scientific mystery that they can find, and then make it available for the whole world. It's by appointment only, but about 300 people a year swing by to check it out and do a little research. They're in the process of being digitalized, so many of the documents can already be consulted on a server. So they're doing that. All people need is an access code, and they're very happy to share it, they say. Some people writing books go there to do research on UFOs. It's the most comprehensive archive for materials involving the global history of the UFO phenomenon in the world. Apparently, the word on the street is you can't study the subject thoroughly without consulting what's in this library. So, and as the topic becomes a little more, I don't want to say accepted or, discussed perhaps after NASA joined the search for UFOs in 2023, saying that they required a rigorous evidence-based approach, places like this have become a little more popular with people coming to check it out. So the AFU also has some surprising material. They have a little known anecdote about a French writer and politician, you may know Victor Hugo, who is that's currently on display. He wrote during his political exile from the British island of Jersey about having encounters with his dead daughter. So his writings are in there. Those writings contributed to a new religion that a lot of people, I guess, follow. So that is an important piece of work that's there. There's a fresco of him on one of the walls. On a wall in a different city. So they have a lot of things there, some interesting things to see. The AFU. I don't know. If you're in Sweden, maybe it'd be interesting to take the time to go there. How about this? That speaking of aliens, this might be proof that aliens existed on Earth. A shape-shifting spider. Found this story on Cron 4 today. So interesting. Fossil was found by a researcher from Oregon State University. It's a new species of an ant-mimicking spider, and it was found in rare fossil form in from Colombia. The specimen appears to be a jumping spider, but it was entombed in copal. It's a kind of a resin. It can be dated up to 3 million years old. The age of the fossil can't really be determined without risking damage to the spider inside. They call it a masquerading spider or a shape-shifting spider. And most have been undetected from fossil researchers until this one showed up. The study was published, research was published in the journal Historical Biology. They say some spiders masquerade as ants in order to appear less desirable as prey. Ants are particularly good creatures for spiders to pretend to be, because a lot of animals find ants distasteful or maybe dangerous to eat. Ants are aggressive in their own defense. They have a strong bite, they have some stinging venom, and they have a lot of allies, right? They all work together as a group. Spiders, though, don't often have chemical defenses. They hang out alone, and it makes them vulnerable to be hunted by larger spiders, wasps, and birds, predators that would all rather avoid ants. So if a spider can look like an ant, well, then it's more likely not to be bothered by creatures trying to eat it. To help them get the whole ant appearance down pat, the spiders usually position their two front legs to look like antennae, and then they also mimic ant behaviors. That is so interesting. It's a challenge, according to researchers, for spiders to accomplish this and transform into ants, because ants have 6 legs and 2 long antennae, while spiders have 8 legs and no antennae. But the abdomen and the cephalothorax of spiders are closely attached. In ants, the equivalent of this body part is separated by a narrow segment. So there's a lot of differences. But these spiders were able to mutate, adapt. It's interesting how they know to do this. So again, this one was from Colombia. One of these masquerading spiders, one of the first, if not the first, to be found in fossilized forms. It's a shapeshifter. How cool is that? Okay, it is Travel Tuesday. And I thought today, instead of going on to far-flung locations, maybe for most of this, we'll go to a couple far-flung locations. We'll keep it local. We'll keep it you know, especially with summer coming and people making travel plans, places that we could actually go, things that we could actually do is what I was trying to do with this today. First stop, let's go to the night train. There is a night train coming between San Francisco and Los Angeles. Now, this isn't the night train. Of course, this is day. But these will be along the tracks that will be used for Dreamstar's San Francisco to Los Angeles night train. And they have signed a collaboration now with Union Pacific to start this deluxe overnight passenger train service between San Francisco and Los Angeles. So, you know, you might want to go to Disneyland for the day, whatever. You don't want to drive all the way down. Gas is expensive. You don't want to pollute the environment. You get on the train, you go to sleep in one city, you wake up in another. The company, the Dreamstar company, has signed a landmark memorandum with Union Pacific Railroad. Not a final contract, but a memorandum of understanding. And it means that they're formalizing the negotiations, working toward this final agreement for Dreamstar to operate its trains on Union Pacific's coastline via Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and San Jose. Dreamstar is hoping to get this service up and running in the summer of 2025. They own most of the 470-mile route. To complete the link between San Francisco and Los Angeles, they also need agreements, though, to use tracks owned by regional transit operators Caltrain and Metrolink. I think I would do this. I mean, I could see this being a really interesting trip. What do you think? Would you take the Dreamstar night train? I'm going to the chat. Let's see what you have to think about it, have to say about it. It would be a long trip. Not really. I mean, you think about how long it takes you to drive there. It's probably faster than driving. You're not going to get caught in any traffic. And you're going to be able to rest and sleep because it's night service, right? Yeah. Mindy would do it. Yep. Beth says it's dark, not much to see. Might as well just take a little rest. Yeah. I think it's interesting. I might actually go for this one. I don't know. The Dreamstar. So by 2025, we'll see if they get this thing up and running. Thanks for the comment. I snore, says Jim. I would keep the others awake. Oh, no. Maybe they'll have a little private room for you. Mm-hmm. Jim loves trains, thinks are the best way to travel leisurely, slowly. Mo, though, worried about how many stops they have along the way. What's their priority? I mean, I would imagine, you know, there might be a few stops, or maybe they'll have certain trains that will go straight through to get you to Los Angeles or San Francisco in the time, you know, really quick time. Sandy, I'd love to travel by train, but I'd want to be able to look at the view. The night train. I don't know. I mean, you wouldn't lose a night of sleep. You wouldn't lose any travel time, right? Rebecca would take it. Yeah. The after party train. Let's go. That's right. I love it. You guys are awesome. I don't know if you saw this, but I'm kind of excited about it. Remember the Notre Dame Theater burned in France? And I thought, selfishly, I mean, I'm obviously worried about what we're leaving behind for people and that this beautiful church, even though I'm not religious, this beautiful church that is the look into the past and, you know, a credit to what humanity can do was gone. And I would never be able to see it, nor would anybody else. Well, they thought that it was going to be a long time to rebuild, restore what happened there. They thought it was going to take a long time. But apparently, after just 5 years, Notre Dame is 90% done. The work is 90% done. And that's really exciting to see. At least for me, because I had really worried about, you know, what was going to happen to it, how long it was going to take, all of these things. And I have a little video that I do want to show you about this, because it has a lot of, you're going to have to bear with it for a second, but it has a lot of compare and contrast. Like, here's what it looked like, here's what it looks like now. So you can really see, I'll take that picture down. You can really see the progress that they're making and what's happened. And this is from CNN.
Cathedral of Notre Dame.
More people come to Notre Dame than the Eiffel Tower. You and I, in our lifetime, have seen projects like this taking 20 years. What percentage of completion do you think you are at now?
Oh, I think we are at 85 or 90.
Wow!
We have finished the roofs,
oui.
The spire.
Mm-hmm.
We have cleaned all the inside, all these woods. We have cleaned the paintings. It's important that we cannot identify what has been rebuilt because it's the same stones and the same type of work, which is the respect we owe to the monument. President Macron said, we will do it in 5 years for 2024. And we are doing it. And we do it perfectly.
Yep. Do it perfectly, just as they should. And it looks so good. So I'm so happy to see that that is occurring. Okay, let's take a little trip. Now we get to take a trip around California. And I thought that these might be, you know, if you're planning summer vacations, maybe weekend getaways, these are some things that you might actually be able to pull off. Things that I might actually be able to pull off. Maybe I'm not going to go see Notre Dame, but maybe I can go to some of these places. So let's take a little trip around California. Some places you may know and you may have been and already love. Some places maybe you haven't heard of. That was the case for me. This is from World Atlas. And our first stop today on Travel Tuesday is a place called Summerland. Have you been? It's really pretty. It might be fun. Summerland is a little spot in Santa Barbara County. Sunny weather, picturesque coastal scenery, laid-back vibes of Southern California. They have strolls along the shoreline. You can see that pathway there. Sound of the waves crashing. Not too far from the Santa Barbara Bird Sanctuary as well. And they've got little spots to sip some wine, enjoy the ocean breeze. Summerland. I've never been there, but I would go. For a weekend getaway, you better believe it. Next stop is the little town of Fillmore. That's picturesque and nice, right? Fillmore is along the Santa Clara River Valley. It was a train town. So it came about when the Southern Pacific Railroad made its way through this valley, the Santa Clara River Valley, in the 1800s. They've got a historical museum there. You can see the artifacts, take a little tour. It's surrounded by agriculture, a lot of lush greenery in this town. There's Kenny Grove Park with towering oak trees and orchards. They've got a tennis and swim club. They've got a Best Western that apparently is pretty nice. So maybe a day, an overnight, I don't know, in the town of Fillmore. Here's another one I'd not heard of. This town is called Wrightswood. Wrightswood is in San Bernardino County, and they call it an alpine village, offering an escape from the hustle and bustle of Los Angeles. It's only 77 miles away from Los Angeles, but it's 6,000 feet in elevation. And a lot of people love to go here during the winter, especially during the snow season. Skiers, snowboarders, tubers, a lot of people go up there and play. But it has beautiful views from the surroundings at various vantage points. They have a zip line thing, the Wrightswood Canopy. You can zip line through it and get a full perspective of what this town looks like. They have a Wrightswood Historical Society, a museum, all of these things. The town of Wrightswood, one I would not have thought of. Now, this one is in my backyard, so I have been to the town of Calistoga before. A lot of wineries, a lot of really cute little shops. Of course, it's in the wine country here in Sonoma County. They have hot springs here. Of course, there's the picture of the Old Faithful geyser, but there are hotels, motels where you can stay, where the pool is really, they say, therapeutic. The water comes from the springs, so it feels different. It's kind of thicker, right? There's therapeutic mud baths, soothing hot springs, and of course, yes, exquisite wines in the Napa Valley. The city of Calistoga, though, that's where the Castello de Amorosa is, which is the kind of like a, oh, well, it is a castle, and they shipped stone from Italy to build this amazing castle in Calistoga. It's really cool. They have a museum there. They have all kinds of things to look at. This is a great weekend getaway, the city of Calistoga. How about this? Have you ever been to Cayucos? I have not. This might have to be put on the list. It's a beachside retreat in San Luis Obispo County, Cayucos. It's a laid-back village. They've got leisurely walks along the pier at Cayucos State Beach. There's fishing. There's the Bluffs, the Estero Bluffs State Park. Untouched beaches, they say. Protected grasslands. Onshore breezes. And a dining scene that is vibrant. They have a restaurant called the Sea Shanty with seafood dishes. And they say it's very peaceful. There's a place called the Shoreline Inn that is good to stay, according to World Atlas. Somewhere else I didn't know about and have never been, a little town called Avalon. Doesn't Avalon mean heaven? Looks pretty cute. Avalon is a getaway on Santa Catalina Island. It, they say, is a remote retreat and might be exactly what you need to relax. Easygoing boat trips, turquoise water surrounding Avalon. I keep thinking of the barrels of chemicals that were dumped in the ocean near here. Maybe don't go swimming, just enjoy the island. Oh, and maybe don't drink the water. I don't know. It's in the sea. But they have the Catalina Adventure Sailing. They have indoor activities as well, a museum for art and history, and exotic flavors, they say. So you can go to the Sand Trap there for Mexican cuisine, and there's a Catalina Island Inn that's pretty fun. So that's the town of Avalon. You know that old carpet place where it was a commercial carpeteria? I can't ever drive past this town without singing it, but it's Carpinteria. And it's on the Central Coast, Seaside Sanctuary, it's being called. A lot of open spaces. It's in Santa Barbara County. They have Carpinteria State Beach, recreational opportunities, so swimming, surfing, fishing, camping, hiking, and there's a Carpinteria Valley Museum as well. So I've not stopped here, but I've always wanted to. This place I have been. This is Cambria. Cambria, also on the Central Coast, it is halfway between Los Angeles and San Francisco. Great stopping point. It's a small town getaway for people that love coastal areas. They have the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve with dramatic ocean bluffs and a grassy marine terrace. Apparently breathtaking views there. Cambria Farmers Market. A lot of cute little stores in this area. Seasonal produce, charming handmade crafts. There's a historical museum here as well. So that's kind of fun. What about if you're doing a California jaunt? Coronado, beautiful in the San Diego area. The luxurious Hotel del Coronado is a great place to stay. I don't know how much it costs, but I'm sure it's lovely. They have some of the best beaches in Southern California. Silver Strand State Beach, Coronado Dog Beach for people vacationing with their pups. And you can also find some greenery at Coronado Tidelands Park. A lot of picnic spaces, a lot of ocean breezes, and a great theater. It's called Lamb Players Theater. They say visiting there is a must. This one reminds me of my grandparents. Oh, we used to stop here on the way home from Disneyland. Maybe you've been here too. Yep, it's Solvang. Solvang is one of the best towns in California to visit. Danish heritage here. It's in the Santa Ynez Valley, and it's really like stepping back into an old European city. They have a museum of art and history to see artifacts that highlight the Danish roots of Solvang. They have a Hans Christian Andersen Museum with the author's works. They have traditional cuisine. They have the Olsen's Danish Village Bakery. Cookies, breads, pastries. So many shops with little crafts and things that are so interesting. This is a place to walk around for a day or two. A great weekend getaway. I've never heard of this place. It's called Oak Glen. Have you been here? Interesting. It's, it is, they call it a delightful escape from the crowds. That means that nobody else has been there either. Natural surroundings, sprawling farmlands, vast orchards. It has beautiful views because of its elevation. It is, Los Rios Rancho. This is in the San Bernardino Mountains, by the way. Offers sweeping views of this area. There's a lot of kid-friendly activities like Oak Tree Mountain. They have pony rides, pig races, a petting zoo. Stone Oak Manor is here. I guess that's a really good place to stay. So if you're interested in Oak Glen, there you go. So, I mean, there's some things we could do. They're fun. But maybe if you'd rather go somewhere else, to another country, guess what's back? Yes, the tulips are back. The biggest tulip garden in the world is marking its 75th edition, they say. This is in the Dutch city of Lisse. It's called Kuikenhof Park, southwest of Amsterdam. They plant 7 million bulbs in this western Dutch city of Lisse. Hundreds of thousands of people come through here. So pretty. The colors alone. They have tulips of every color. They also have other flowers there as well. But it's a very popular tourist attraction. They had about 1.5 million people come through there last year. It is one of the most photographed spots in the world. Beautiful. They say they've started this in 1949. It was a group of bulb exporters and growers that wanted it to be a showcase of tulips, and that it is. Tourists from more than 100 countries come here. It's a big draw, right? So the 75th edition, pretty good. I would love to see that someday. So the park is now open, and it will stay open until May 12th while the tulips are in bloom. Really special spot. And it's definitely something that makes you feel like you're in that region of the world. If you are going to Hawaii, maybe a lot of people try to leave, especially locals, try to leave offerings for Pele, who's the goddess of fire. But now people are being warned, don't leave offerings at Kilauea's summit that could harm the environment. Hawaii Volcanoes National Park on the Big Island, they're posting this warning on social media. They are sharing photos of people that leave food in roasting pans that rots up there. Plastic-wrapped flowers. You don't want to leave plastic in the nature and the environment, right? Other non-traditional items all left at the sacred summit area. So people go leave offerings to Pele. You know, they're trying to get her not to what? Blast the volcano again. People leave offerings to pay respect to Pele Hanumea, the elemental deity of volcanism and creation. But park officials say it can attract or introduce non-invasive species to the park. They can say consider honoring in this way, that oil or some other type of offering that's more natural instead of leaving stuff in pans or plastic wrapped flowers. They don't want to do that. Here in Northern California, the ski season is being extended. So they have so much snow that they are extending the ski season. And that's kind of exciting for people that love to ski. The 2024 ski season being extended two resorts right now extending their opening dates well into spring. So that is Sugar Bowl and Kirkwood, and both have announced plans to lengthen their seasons. Kirkwood Mountain Resort is adding 2 weeks to the already memorable ski and ride season. They will be open until at least April 28th at this point. So, yeah, we had in mid-December, the snowpack was at 28%, but some big storms came through in January and in February. Tomorrow, we're supposed to get rain in the Bay Area, which usually means even more snow in the Sierra. Sugar Bowl is also announcing its lifts will be running until the end of April. So spring skiing is in full effect in the Sierra. I don't know if you saw this story about the worst airport. Used to be LAX was the worst airport, right? But they've done a lot of renovation. They've put a lot of money into LAX. And so perhaps it's no longer the worst airport. That's good. I mean, if you know you're the worst airport and you know you need to clean it up and you know you need to make some changes, that's great. Here it is. Lots of palm trees, kind of a pretty airport. With over 75 million passengers a year, Los Angeles International Airport is definitely one of the busiest in the country. They've got 9 passenger terminals there. It's the most terminals in the world. And they started this $30 billion renovation to completely redesign the LAX airport experience. They're not totally done with it yet. They're going to keep working on it until 2030. But already, what they've done is making this a much more enjoyable place to be. So for people on a long layover at LAX, you know traffic's horrible there. So instead, they have an In-N-Out right down the street. They have the LAX adjacent food hall called Proud Bird. So they're putting a lot of interesting things in here, a lot more of food and some things for people to do. They have connected all 9 of their terminals for the first time. So if there's a few extra hours between your flight, you can now get to any point in the airport by a brisk walk. It's a big airport. You can go from end to end, terminals 1 through 8, including the Tom Bradley International Terminal. It's about a 2-mile walk. Takes you 35 minutes. But if you have a layover and you want to stretch your legs and get a little exercise, then you can do the 2-mile walk end to end. Takes about, they say, a little more than a half hour. There's also along the way pieces for rest and relaxation. They have all kinds of things. Yeah. It's interesting. There are some fancy places in here too, like the Delta Sky Club. But if you're an economy passenger like I would be, they don't let you go in there. That's all right. But it's interesting. They have it's called a theme building, and it's right between terminals 1 and 2. It's a space age landmark that has become one of their most famous features. You can see it in TVs and movie TV shows and movies all the time. It's a 4-legged modern building that's about 60 years old, but it was designated as a historical monument. So, and there's all kinds of celebrity restaurants and eateries here too. They have the Ludacris Chicken and Beer, the Kitchen by Wolfgang Puck, all kinds of things. So supposedly LAX getting a little bit better. And that, my friends, is Travel Tuesday. And thus also ends the After Party Live. Definitely some people to thank. And those would be Angel in the Bay Area. Huge thank you to you. So appreciate it. Spencer Jaffe with the nice message. I'll take that. Beth, please let us see the PayPal link. I can't find it. Okay, it's in the show description. So there's descriptions of the stories that we talk about. And then at the very bottom, it's there as well. So if you email me, kim@theafterparty.live, I can also send you the link if you want it. Wes with the $5 super sticker as well. Thank you guys for supporting this show. Whether you're a PayPal subscriber, monthly subscriber, contributor, or whatnot, whether you're throwing down the super stickers, I just really appreciate all of you. And that also includes Janet R., who is, I would say, sponsored the whole show today. Sponsored the whole show for all the whole week. Really appreciate all the contributions and everything you guys do. Thank you for being here and hanging out with me on this Travel Tuesday. I will see you back here tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm filling in for Nikki Maduro, and I do have Loretta Lynch, former president of the California Public Utilities Commission, that will be joining me, and we will talk about what's going on with PG&E, what's going on with those AT&T landlines, and much more. That starts at 9 a.m. Loretta will be on with me at 10 a.m. on The Nikki Maduro Show. Mark Thompson tomorrow. We will talk to David Katz. He pops up a day early along with John Rothman. That going on the Mark Thompson Show. And then I'll see you here where we can relax and hang out. And I appreciate it. Thank you for all the comments. You know, it's interesting. When I'm by myself now, I can't read the comments as much as I would like to and then still have a smooth show. So after the show, I find myself going back and reading all the comments, and there's so much I want to respond to and say. That's the bummer part of it. But do know that whatever you've typed, now I'm going to go back and I'm going to read the whole entire list of comments. So thank you for participating in the show, for keeping the chat fun, for all the funny things and humor that you inject. It really makes my afternoon. So thank you for being here. And again, we'll be right back at it tomorrow. So I'll meet you right here. This is The After Party Live.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.